This podcast, written, performed, and produced by The Devil, is brought to you by the above top secret family of websites. www.abovetopsecret.com.
You're listening to a From the Left podcast. Now, where are my pants?
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to the Big O's Lost Podcast. I'm your host, the Big O. Big O's Lost Broadcast is brought to you by AboveTopSecret.com. AboveTopSecret.com bringing you the best in conspiracy-related website threads in the entire world. I challenge you to challenge that statement. Any rate, I'm not here to talk about ATS, BTS, or PTS, or any of the other TSs that we may have that I'm not aware of. I'm here to talk about one thing that we all love, and that is the television show Lost. So let's get right down to it, kids. Let's play radio. So this week's episode is brought to you by the book Catch-22. Catch-22, a book none of us have probably ever read. Any rate, I'm going to try to do my best podcast ever for this, and I think I might be able to do it. So let's get down to business. Right off the bat, Charlie gets killed. Oh my goodness. I freaked out. Anybody else freak out? I was like, wow, not exactly how I expected him to go. But then we find out it was only a flashback. Thank you, Desmond. Thank you for viewing the future, because I was freaking out for a couple minutes there. So the episode turns out to be Desmond-centric, but we did get a lot of follow-up on the Sawyer, Kate, Jack, Juliet, Love Square, or whatever we want to call it here. Not too sure. Any rate, bottom line of the episode is Desmond has this vision of Charlie getting axed, but during the vision he sees all this stuff, here's a helicopter, and for whatever reason decides that on that helicopter is Penelope and she's coming to get him, or he's going to see her again or whatever. So he decides that he needs to bring all of the people that were in his vision with him, retrace that vision exactly, or else the end result won't be the same. So he convinces everybody to come along. Cute scene where they're trying to get Sun to go, and Hurley gets him by convincing him to go camping. And he's like, dude, everybody loves marshmallows. Another cool line by Hurley is he goes to Desmond, he's like, dude, this is future crap, isn't it? So, once again, Hurley proves that he's a lot smarter than people give him credit for. So, at any rate, I don't remember seeing Penelope in his vision, so I don't know why he jumped to that conclusion, but I'll get out more of that later on the show. All right, so a couple of the flashbacks come by. We learned Desmond was about to get married at one point to a woman named Ruth. I tuned in halfway through the second season, so I don't know if this has ever been covered before, but anyway, they'd been together for 6 years, and he just disappeared right before the wedding. So seems to be a reoccurring thing with Charlie and commitment. I don't know what the deal is, but in the episode he admits to being a coward, which has been covered. So we find out that that Desmond disappeared and tried to become a monk, which was pretty cool. So we see him, and he's this vow of silence, and interesting scene in the first part of his flashback is he's sitting there looking through the Bible, and he looks up, stands up, and then a second later, the head monk comes through the front door. Now, I rewound it because I didn't remember hearing a knock, and I rewound it, and sure enough, there wasn't a knock. So then I was like, well, what told him to get up? So I rewound it again, and I didn't even hear any footsteps. And I had the volume up really loud listening for this. So I think Desmond knew the guy was coming and didn't even realize it, and he stood up. I'll get on more to this later, but I think, well, actually, no, I'm not going to get on to this later. I think Desmond's had his powers the whole time. He just hasn't realized he's had them, and the hatch incident is what kind of awoke those for him. So at any rate, a couple other things in some later flashbacks is we did get to see Desmond's first encounter with Penelope when he was leaving the monastery. He was packing up a bunch of boxes of the wine they make there into the back of a Land Rover, and lo and behold, who's the driver of the Land Rover but Penelope? So I thought that was kind of cool. She was a little aggressive and very forward as far as hitting on him, so to speak, and there was some flirtation. So that was neat to see their first meeting, and I'm glad that the writers gave us that. Little piece of tidbit here. The writer of this episode also wrote Man from Tallahassee, which was Locke's flashback episode a couple weeks back. So if anybody enjoyed the two, that, you know, that might be the why, might be the reason you you get a kick out of this guy. I wish I had his name up, but I don't. So throughout the episode, we see Desmond leading the group through the forest, and we all know it's going to lead up eventually to the incident where Charlie gets an arrow shot through his throat. And when that time comes, even though Charlie wants to see Penelope really bad, he makes the right call and saves Charlie's life. Again, for the fourth time now. So, let's see, four times? He had the lightning bolt, he had the Claire drowning, and then he told Claire about the time that he went to get the seagull because had he hadn't, Charlie would have fallen in the water and banged his head, and then this time. So yeah, that's four times he saved his life, even though he only mentioned two, I think. I don't think he mentioned the Claire incident. So, so he saves Charlie, and he's all bummed out because now he doesn't believe Penelope's going to be the pilot, or he thinks he's altered the future or whatever. So, they rush over to where the pilot crashed, or parachuted. Oh, I forgot to mention during the episode, they see the helicopter clum and they see it crash into the water, which wasn't part of his flashback, but he remembers seeing a flashing red light through the clouds. I thought at first they were shooting a laser at it or something. But then it looks like it's a beacon from a parachute. So they find the parachuted pilot, and it's just one, which I thought was odd. Why would you send one person in a helicopter over a crazy island? But, you know, hey, that's me. I don't get to run the show here. So they find Naomi in her backpack, and they cut her down. Inside her backpack, she's got a Portuguese version of Catch-22. So I think it's safe to assume that she is involved somehow with the men from the Arctic Research Station that Penelope is working with, whether it is she's also Portuguese with them or whatever. I guess we'll find out. But anyway, her name's Naomi. And then the article kind of cuts from there. She recognizes Desmond. She says his name. And then we see another picture in the Catch-22 of Desmond and Penelope. So I don't know if that means that, you know, why are there two pictures? I thought Desmond had the only copy of that picture. Did he go back in time and alt? The producers of the show have acknowledged that Desmond actually went back in time. I don't know if anybody's aware of that, but they did acknowledge he legitimately went back in time. So this wasn't a vision. He went back in time. So maybe he's altered the timeline somewhat so that there's two versions of that picture. I don't know, but hopefully this gets cleared up. But I just wanted to toss that out there. So they find her. She says Desmond's name. He looks up. Everyone's like, "Well, how the heck does she know who he is?" And bam, we cut to the episode. So that's it for the Lost recap. Noticeably shorter this week. I'm going to try to get them even more tight. I just want to hit on the key elements. So now we're going to get into what I call Lost Research Theories and Hooliganism Extravaganza. All right, we're back. Now, the second portion of the show, I'm going to try to go over some theories of things I've been researching, either coming off the episode or things that I've thought of that really aren't related. One thing I did forget to mention in the recap was the picture on the monk's desk did have the lady, the ring lady from Desmond's flashback episode, and I think that's probably the most spotted Easter egg ever in Lost history. So at any rate, what I want to cover here are ideas that I kind of chew on, and some of the stuff you'll have already read on the message board if you're on the Lost message board on BelowTopSecret.com. But let's get down into it. So I'm trying to think, how does oh, you know what? I need a sip of water. Hang on. Good stuff. All right. So I'm thinking, how does Penelope play into this? We saw at the end of season two, she was in her bed. I think she was in her bed. And the Arctic research guys notice the anomaly. They contact her. And I don't remember what she says, but I think it's, you know, we know where he is or we've located them or whatever. It's time to go, whatnot. I'm thinking to myself, how does she know what to look for? Then I remember who the heck her father is. Her father is Charles Winmore. She's a Windmore, who were ridiculously rich. And anybody who followed the Lost Experience knows that the Hanzo, what's the Hanzo Corp Company or Hanzo Corporation? Or, you know what, I need to make sure I'm on this. Lostpedia, here we come. Where are we? Shoot. This is radio, children. All right, Hanzo Foundation. So, the Hanzo Foundation was actually housed on the 42nd floor of the Winmore Building. So, a little tidbit there. Also, from the book Bad Twin that was written by Gary Troop, who was one of the passengers, which is part of the canon. He shows that the two of them were kind of in cahoots on some stuff. So I don't think that's a mere coincidence. As a matter of fact, it isn't a mere coincidence. There's more to that. So Windmore, Penelope's father is involved with some of the stuff that's going down with Hanzo, and I'm going to get a little more to that in a minute. Now, from the lost experience in the Sri Lanka video, Middlework, who was the head of the Hanzo Corporation while Alvar Hanzo was missing. He's talking in the Sri Lanka video about some, after we see the Alvar Hanzo, introduction, which is a video from the late 70s, a Dharma Initiative video, kind of like one of the, orientation videos, but it was like the overall orientation video that everybody would see, before they even got to the island, not necessarily related to what they'll be doing there. But the lost experience showed in the Sri Lanka video that Middlework talks about some virus they created that they're going to unleash on Sri Lanka. Now, that got me thinking. I'm like, all right, well, virus. Okay, so we're getting the virus thing again. And I remembered that because last episode they talked about the virus that Claire had, and then the virus that Desmond thought was on the island, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, this can't be a coincidence either. This has to be something important, that the fact that the virus keeps hopping up. So, any rate, Hanzo created some super virus down to the calculation that they knew exactly 30% of the people on Sri Lanka were going to die. Now, Hanzo was going to show up on the island, and as cover, we're going to, during the research and seeing, you know, if their virus was successful or not, supposedly give out these vaccines or whatever. But at any rate, they knew that it would work perfectly if exactly 30% of the people died. If it was over or under 30%, the experiment would be a failure. Now, I don't know why they would want to kill off 30% of Sri Lanka. I don't know. But they were going to release the virus in two villages, and I guess it was going to be total pandemonium from there. So, and why would it be a failure if it was more or less than 30%? Why did it have to be 30% exactly? I don't know. But reading a little more, that gets me it got me to the Valenzi equation. Enzo Valenzi came up with this equation that was commissioned by the UN shortly after the Cuban Missile Crisis. This is just Lost. This, in case you don't know, this is part of Lost. I'm not quoting actual stuff here. So shortly after the Cuban Missile Crisis, everyone was like, well, we almost did it. We almost killed ourselves off. We have to figure out when we're actually going to do it. So the UN commissions Enzo Valenzi to come up with this equation that supposedly is going to reveal when mankind's going to kill itself. Comes up with the numbers, and that's where the numbers come from. Problem is, no one knows what the heck the numbers mean or what, but they know, or Valenzi said that each one of the numbers represents a variable. And those variables are somehow related to the hieroglyphics we've seen, either in the hatch or in general. I don't know if the ones in the hatch are actually the ones that related to the numbers, or if they translate into something else. I don't know, but there was something there. And Dharma was set up. The Narva Initiative was set up to change the variables. And their view was that if they could change one of the variables, they would prevent the end of the world, or at least alter it somehow. I don't know if their goal was to change all the variables. The problem is nobody knows what the variables are. So how do you change them? So I don't think the experiments on the island were necessarily fake or BS. I think they were legitimate experiments, and that they viewed that if they could get some insight into how people were reacting to things, they could then extrapolate that data into equating to one of the variables. I don't know. But maybe that'll become more apparent. But that led me to some other things. Something, the Cuban Missile Crisis. All right. Let's look at that a little bit. The Valenzi equation was commissioned shortly after the Cuban Missile Crisis, and Dharma started, their initiative started after the Valenzi equation. All right. So Cuban Missile Crisis took place in late 1962. Lost takes place in 2004. All right. So that's about 42 years. Now, Ben said he has lived his entire life on the island. Now, we assume Ben's age is around 40 to 45 years old. So that, theoretically, depending on what age they peg Ben at, which I think will become apparent soon, I think we're going to find out how old he is, that makes it completely plausible that he came to the Dharma Initiative in the womb or was conceived right after they got there. Now, this is important because I think this relates back to Windmore. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, so we've kind of come full circle here. We're back to Ben after, you know, our seemingly tangents on Windmore and the Valencia equation and all this stuff. And I'm going to throw this out here, and this is my lost crazy hooliganism theory extravaganza. I think Ben and Penelope are brother and sister. Now, my theory is that Ben is the illegitimate child of Windmore. He had relations with one of the original Dharma researchers. And one way or another, either Charles or Windmore had it on the island with her, and he was there for the beginning, or prior to the researcher getting to the island, and she found out she's pregnant afterwards. But I believe that Ben is the illegitimate. Well, believe maybe is the wrong word, but my theory is that he's the child of Windmore, and he and Penelope are our brothers now, our brother and sister. So we'll see what happens with that. But I think there's other things on the island that Windmore wants to stay hidden. Something that may play into his hands. So maybe it's the virus. Now, Middlework and the Lost Experience on the Sri Lanka video, that takes place in 2006. So maybe this virus that they're talking about is one of the things being developed there. Now, Dharma may intended to use it for something completely different. Maybe they needed to create this virus, and this virus has some sort of relation to the numbers. And after they created it, they were then going to, or out of that virus, figure out some sort of answer. So maybe Dharma wasn't going to use the virus for ill, but Windmore sees the perfect opportunity to make a ton of money. So he and Middlework get in cahoots, and they think, okay, well, here's the deal. We're going to unleash this virus. We're going to set up our scientists and make them think that we're going to stop 30% of the people, but the virus is going to get out. We've got the cure, though. And guess who has the contract to get the cure? Windmore. And they're going to be the only company that gets to make it, which means landfall profits. They're going to make a ton of money because they're going to have the cure to this virus that can end mankind. So, you know, maybe that's what the annihilation part is of the trailer that aired last week. I don't know. But I thought those were some interesting things that started to pop out of my head after watching this episode and being able to chew on it for a little while. Either way, Windmore, I believe, does not want something to get off that island. And when Penelope found out where Desmond was and noticed the anomaly, I find it hard to believe that her father did not also figure out what she was up to. And I think that the helicopter pilot lady is their chance to reach out and tell the people on the island something bad's coming. And I think, you know, we're going to find out in the next episode or two what that is. So, you know, leads to another thing. What is the helicopter's range? Now, a helicopter can't fly over crazy amounts of land, which means, crazy distances, which means either that the Lost Island is a lot closer to a larger landmass than anybody realizes, or there is a ship off sea that the helicopter launched from. Now, the question is, was the helicopter supposed to land on the island? Was it purely doing reconnaissance? Was it supposed to drop something? Maybe we'll find those things out. I don't know. But those are some interesting questions that were posed based on the scenario that the Losties and Desmond and them are faced with. So we'll find out a little bit. But those are my Lost research theories and hooliganism extravaganza for the week. Next time, after the next episode, maybe I'll have some more stuff and everything that I just came up will come crashing down. But I'm positive Windmore is going to play into this a lot more. All right, next segment on the show is next week on Lost. This can contain potential spoilers, but let me clarify for a second. I use what's called soft spoilers. I haven't seen the show. I'm not going to report on anything anybody's seen the show. I try to avoid hard spoilers, which is legitimate, actual evidence that people know. All my stuff is going to be based on the trailer and other things I've been able to read, such as the title of the next episode. Most of the stuff is already covered on the board. So unless you absolutely do not want anything known, which would include the title or know about next week's trailer, any of that stuff, tune off now. But otherwise, I mean, this is probably pretty safe for everybody on the message board. Because if I don't believe I'm going to cover anything new here that anybody hasn't read about or I haven't already posed now. So it's your last warning. If you're going to tune out, thanks for tuning in. I'll talk to you next week and make sure you post on the boards. If not, I'm going to play the trailer and we'll get right down into it.
Next Wednesday, a stranger has fallen from the sky.
What if this is a rescue? What if she came for us?
But the promise of rescue is only the beginning. And the fate of this survivor...
What happens to pregnant women on this island?
...will be revealed. There are only 4 episodes left until the season finale, and you can't miss one.
I lose either way.
And all new Lost, next Wednesday at 10, 9 central, only on ABC. To catch up anytime, go to abc.com.
All right, now as we all thought, the trailer shows that next week's episode will be Jin and Sun centric. So let's get down into it. Next week's episode is titled DOC. Now I've posed that could stand for a couple different things. Could it be Death of Charlie? Could it be Death of Chair or Chair? Chair. Yeah, that's great, Steve. All right, or could that be Death of Claire? Now, after seeing the trailer, I think something else. What if it stands for Death of Children? Look at that trailer again and you let me know. Obviously, Sun's going to get down to the nitty-gritty on what exactly happens on the island. Now, whether Juliet gives her the real scoop, which I doubt she does because she never tells the truth. Anybody who ever thinks she does, she's never, ever told the truth. And, you know, so I'm sure what's going to come out of her mouth next week are going to be complete fabrications and lies. Or at least some sort of spin on the reality. But at any rate, so next week's episode is going to be Sun and Jin-centric. The synopsis from Lostpedia, and I don't know where they get this, is from, says the following. After learning that the other's pregnant women died before giving birth on the island, Sun allows Juliet to examine her. Desmond allows an unlikely nemesis to help save the life of a new mysterious island inhabitant. Jin becomes aware of the identity of Sun's father's baby. Jin becomes aware of the identity of the father of Sun's baby. Okay. Sounds like a good episode. Good times for everybody. What caught me was unlikely nemesis. What, you know, WTF. Who, an unlikely nemesis? Who's this? Charlie? I don't know. Who does Desmond have beef with? I don't know anybody Desmond has beef with. So, you know, maybe somebody else is going to be introduced that we find out hates Desmond or Desmond hates or whatever, but that threw me for a loop. You know, Desmond allows an unlikely nemesis to help save the life of a new mysterious island inhabitant. Now, obviously, that goes back to Naomi. So somebody who Desmond and Scott beef with helped save Naomi's life. I have no idea. Who knows? The next two episodes are The Brig, Man Behind the Curtain, and Through the Looking Glass. The Brig, I believe, will be lock-centric based on the title. Who knows? Man Behind the Curtain, Ben, I'm hoping. Rumor has it there's a Ben flashback coming up. We've talked about that a little bit on the boards. And the finales, the two-hour finales, Through the Looking Glass. Now, that should be a Jack episode. I've got some potentially hard spoilers here, but not really. All I know is that from somebody who lives in Hawaii, they saw them shooting at a bar or something. And Jack had on a big, thick beard. I don't know the context of it, so I don't know what episode that figures into. I would assume his flashback, but you know, you think Jack looks scruffy now. Evidently, we're going to see him even scruffier. So, you know, what I don't know if it's a Grizzly Adams beard or just a, you know, I haven't shaved in a month beard, but he's supposed to be kind of beardy. So, you know, that's really what we got coming up the next couple weeks. We're getting to the end of the season. I personally hope they do something at the end of this year similar to Lost Experience last year, fleshing some stuff out. The producers of the show have said they don't anticipate anything until they really think of a story they needed to do. Because this last one, they wanted to flesh out some of the real-world implications the background of Hanzo and things of that nature. So, you know, I don't know, but I would doubt they would admit to anything if they had something planned. It would kind of ruin the ARG nature of the Lost Experience game and anything else they do. So let's hope that they come up with something, because we have a very long wait to the start of next season after this one wraps up. And the game will figure into filling in some of the gaps. Personally, as I've said before, I think the game's going to suck, just like most movie television game adaptions suck. Hopefully I'd be pleasantly surprised. Evidently it's supposed to be some sort of first person type of game. You know, I think we're all going to be let down. I'll probably run it anyways, but You know, I don't have high hopes for the game, so maybe I'll be surprised. But that's going to wrap it up for me, so thanks for tuning in. I got the show in under a half hour, which was what my goal was. Yeah, baby. So hopefully we'll even get it a little more, a little tighter than that next time. Typically when I do podcasts, I record them live to tape, which means I have everything pre-produced into my segments. So when I actually break for commercial in those, I legitimately break for a commercial, and I listen to it and then start up when the next music hits. So can't really do that with this show because you kind of need to ramble in certain occasions. But I got it in under a half hour. I'm happy. I did get some IMs from some people or UDUs asking me about what software I use. So I'll say it now. I use GarageBand. I have a MacBook, which I've mentioned a couple times. I use GarageBand. I just have a $30. Let's see here. What is? Pardon the noise here. I have a $30 Audio Technica microphone. ATR-20. I bought it at Best Buy. It picks up my sound just, you know, fine. Now that noise is me fiddling. I also have a windscreen on it, or a pop filter, depending on how you want to term it. It cost me about $3 at a local music store. I also bought a mic stand, which allows me to work the mic really close, and I can have the sensitivity up. That cost me about $30. And then I've just got a nice pair of Sony headset that I use. It cost me about $30 or so, but I've pieced this stuff together. It wasn't just one big purchase through the years. Eventually I'd like to get a mixing board and some other things, because I do other recording and whatnot and producing on my MacBook. So that would help benefit me. Now, those of you who don't have a Mac and are curious about what other software there is out there, CNET.com has a pretty good resource on how to look at on some other podcasting software. I've heard nothing but good things about Audacity, which is a podcasting service which allows you to do a bunch of things. So you might want to check that out if you're interested in doing your own podcast. There's also a neat thing called TalkShoe, which allows you to kind of record stuff and have actual listeners call in and take live podcasts. So you actually do the show live. It's kind of like live internet talk show. And I listen to it. Anybody who's a fan of PvP Online, they do a show almost once every other week or once a week or so, and I've never called in, but I enjoy listening to those live, and I know you can record them and do some other such things. So if you're interested in getting a little more advanced, which I may try to do with some of the podcasts over the summer, see if we can't get multiple people calling in, that may be something I look into. I'm not sure of the costs that are associated with that. But just remember, any podcast you do, you know, it's nice with Above Top Secret because we get to upload them. Now, we have to encode them at a rate to meet the file size. But if you can keep your podcast under 20 minutes, which is what all my From the Left podcasts are, you can keep the sound quality at 128. Now, I haven't really had any problems. I convert from AAC to MP3, and it sounds groovy. So this I have to encode a little lower because they've been longer. Hopefully, I'll get them under 20 minutes eventually. Anyway, that's going to wrap it up for me. Thanks for tuning in. Remember to post on the message boards. I'd like to give a shout-out to Above Top Secret for the hosting and the bandwidth to listen to the show, and Below Top Secret, which is, by my view, the most entertaining, by far my most entertaining leisure chat board out there. I really enjoy that, especially the lost message board. So keep it real and tune in next week for more Big O's Lost Podcast.
hang up and try again.